evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, March 6, 2024. A U.S. court in the state of Arizona arrests two South Sudanese nationals for alleged involvement in illegal arms deal. And the UN says Sudan is at the threshold of countrywide starvation.
What we're looking at right now in Sudan alone is 18 million people who are in acute hunger. We expect to see a rise, actually, in the levels of hunger and a worsening of the situation.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Justice Department has ordered the arrest of two South Sudanese nationals based in the United States for allegedly violating export controls and conspiring to send weapons costing millions of dollars to their home country. A court affidavit filed at the Arizona District Court stated that Peter Bier Ajak and Abraham Chol Ketch allegedly sought to send rifles, grenade launchers, Stinger missile systems, hand grenades, and ammunition to South Sudan. The defendants were accused of unlawfully trying to smuggle heavy weapons and ammunition from the United States into South Sudan. We'll come to that story later in this broadcast. Over 130 youth from Sudan meeting in Entebbe, Uganda, calling on the newly appointed U.S. envoy to Sudan to apply pressure on the warring factions in their country to implement a ceasefire. Alima Athumani reports from Entebbe.
The young men and women formed a new organization called Sudanese Youth Network for Ending the War and Establishing a Democratic Civil Transformation. They accused the international community of neglecting the ongoing conflict in Sudan. The UN says more than 10 million Sudanese have been displaced by the ongoing conflict that broke out on April 15th last year. Last month, the U.S. government appointed Tom Perriello as the new U.S. special envoy for Sudan. The youth appealed to the new U.S. envoy to play a positive role in the ongoing peace talks. Sudanese youth Shaima Rashid says she hopes the special envoy could advocate for peace at higher levels, such as the United Nations Security Council.
The first step is to have a ceasefire agreements and also to implement on the ground tools and mechanisms to monitor this agreement and also facilitating the humanitarian access in Sudan, because really people are suffering.
The U.S. and the Saudis attempted to negotiate a ceasefire between Sudan armed forces under General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, head of the Sudanese army, and General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, known as Hemeti, head of the paramilitary rapid support forces, to agree to a dialogue and a ceasefire. Dominic Ahmed is a Sudanese activist who attended the Uganda meeting. She says young people have been used to fuel the conflict by both the RSF and the Sudan armed forces. Ahmed says young men and women should take an active role to end the conflict.
We hope that this new appointed person can really look into the suffering of people of Sudan, and he can really stand for stopping the war. And the most people who are affected by this war are youth and women and children also. And the people who are fighting there also, they are youth. Like, so which means that these are the most people who are losing in this war. We want this war to stop.
Rabi Musa Abdurrahman left Sudan 5 days before the war broke out. He says the international community has neglected the humanitarian crisis in Sudan.
We need to make shame and to push and make a lot of pressure for those side conflicts and get access to humanitarian aid to the people of Sudan without any discrimination. We don't want to say just the United States supporting you. We know that, but we need the real action from them.
The three-day meeting in Uganda ended with resolutions asking the U.S. envoy to pressure Sudan's military leaders to end the fighting, to expose individuals benefiting from the conflict, and to end all human rights violations and the impunity for those committing the abuses. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Entebbe, Uganda.
Still on Sudan, Sudan has agreed for the first time to take delivery of humanitarian aid via Chad and South Sudan. That's according to a government statement issued on Wednesday. The Sudanese government say they will specify routes and airports in different regions to receive delivery of aids. The World Food Programme warns that Sudan's ongoing conflict is fueling an unprecedented hunger crisis, not only within Sudan, but also in neighbouring South Sudan and Chad. Nabil Biagio discusses the situation with Lini Kinsley, the head of the communications for WFP in Nairobi.
The war in Sudan risks creating the world's largest hunger crisis, affecting Sudan, but also South Sudan and Chad, where a lot of Sudanese refugees and also other refugee returnees are going back to, unless the fighting stops to stem the flow of people fleeing into neighboring countries. And WFP is able to deliver urgently needed food assistance. And for this to be prevented, there needs to be an immediate ceasefire to prevent a complete collapse of the country and further regional destabilization. What we're looking at right now in Sudan alone is 18 million people who are in acute hunger. That's 37% of the population. But to explain, that is now currently in the middle of the harvest season, which is typically the most food secure time of the year. In the coming months, we expect to see a rise actually in the levels of hunger and a worsening of the situation, because the lean season is coming, and that means that food stocks are going to run out. And we're already looking at a below-average harvest year, agricultural production this year, also because of the impact of the conflict. So we anticipate that these needs will just skyrocket, and we could be looking at a looming hunger catastrophe that is unprecedented. And especially if the fighting doesn't stop, this will just continue to spiral into higher levels of hunger and deeper levels of hunger.
And beside the fighting itself that is ongoing and devastating, access seems to be a major issue here. You mentioned, WFP mentions that 90% of people facing hunger in Sudan are in inaccessible areas. Tell me a little bit about that. And we know that aid has been prevented from entering Sudan, although we seem to be seeing good news that the government in Port Sudan, the army, is willing to allow aid to flow in from Chad and South Sudan. Can you tell me a little bit about these developments?
So at the moment, the people who are in the highest level of hunger, which at the moment in Sudan is emergency level, that is the second worst category before catastrophic. Of those, we are only able to reach and access 1 in 10 people. So exactly 90% of the people who are currently in the highest levels of hunger in Sudan, we are not able to reach. This is mostly areas where conflict is ongoing, like Khartoum, the Kordofan region in South Central Sudan, as well as in the Darfur, where it's been extremely challenging to access. So we welcome the announcement from the authorities that they will allow cross-border operations, cross-border aid deliveries from Chad into Western Sudan to resume, as well as the cross-border operations from South Sudan into Sudan. This is a welcome step that needs to be put into action immediately as we start to move the trucks and move food. We would hope that we see those words put into action and those guarantees fulfilled.
Speaking of South Sudan and Chad, South Sudan, for example, you estimate, and other UN organizations estimate that 600,000 Sudanese have fled Sudan and they're now in South Sudan, and they're also facing severe hunger. Chad also has been taking hundreds of thousands of refugees from Darfur, and it's really at this point a regional hunger and displacement crisis. Can you say a few words about that?
Yeah, so we have seen now nearly 2 million people who have fled from Sudan into neighboring countries, mostly Chad and South Sudan, where resources are already very scarce, where there are already high levels of food insecurity and instability. And so people who are fleeing the violence in Sudan arrive at the border and are met with more hunger and continue to struggle how to survive. And in these areas, WFP urgently requires additional funding to be able to scale up its support to the refugees and in some cases returnees who are crossing borders.
That was Eleni Kunsley, WFP's head of communications, speaking with my colleague Nabil Biagio from the Kenyan capital this past hour. The Justice Department has ordered for the arrest of two South Sudanese nationals based in the United States for allegedly violating export controls and conspiring to send weapons costing millions of dollars to their home country, South Sudan. A court affidavit filed at the Arizona District Court stated that Peter Abier Ajak and Abraham Chol Ketch allegedly sought to send rifles, grenade launchers, Stinger missile systems, hand grenades and ammunition to South Sudan. The defendants sought to unlawfully smuggle heavy weapons and ammunition from the United States into South Sudan. For VOA News, Dennis Longoni reports from Juba.
Abier Ajak's party, Revive South Sudan Party, confirmed his arrest and said it was simply an administrative detention to pave the way for investigations pending court proceedings. The statement adds that Abier will be released soon to defend himself in court. Deng Bol Deng, a civil society activist and a human rights defender, expressed fear for the civil society activists in South Sudan. He thinks the suspects, Peter Abier Ajak and Abraham Chol Ketch, might have been framed.
Considering his stances and his political activities recently, again as the head of state in particular of South Sudan, and his dealing of the public affairs, he's often been on social media questioning and criticizing critically the public issue in the country. And so it is also very clear that the country, especially the political class, have not been happy about his political activism. This can be sort of a framing, try to turn him black, to silence his political activism.
Dabeg Mabior, a civil society activist and the acting chairperson of the Civil Society Alliance, has questions about how Biar could have been involved in the arms deal.
We are against any supplies of guns towards South Sudan because this will affect our situation. Because now here in South Sudan, we are looking for peace. We are not looking for the armed conflict. If there is any issues, we need to resolve through dialogue, through engagement. Like now we are implementing peace agreement. We are encouraging peaceful opposition, not armed opposition.
Efforts to reach Michael Makwei, the government spokesperson and the Minister of Foreign Affairs, were unsuccessful. Makwei says he was in a meeting. Biar Forte has been a fierce critic of President Kiir's government. He was jailed in 2018 and charged with treason. Those charges were dropped, but he was convicted of disturbing the peace over interviews he gave to foreign media. Kiir later pardoned him. Last year, Biar received asylum in the United States and resigned from the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, which Kiir leads. According to documents from the U.S. District Court of the State of Arizona, Biar and Ketch are charged with attempting to smuggle automatic rifles, grenade launchers, Stinger missile systems, hand grenades, and sniper rifles, violating the United Nations arms embargo imposed on South Sudan. The Justice Department's charges say the two were working with undercover federal agents who posed as arms dealers in February 2023. If convicted, they could face up to 20 years in prison for each of the three charges against them. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logoni reporting from Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Sudanese refugees living in northern Bahr al-Ghazal state say their children are facing malnutrition. Find out why after the break.
Hello. Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Our words of wisdom comes from Terekeka, Central Equatorial State.
Hi, Voice of America. This is Kenyu Wani David from South Sudan, Juba. I have a Mundari proverb. Say, ad injiri abodan dingita rojo I diniki inagajoguma kungurupi. It said, if a bird stay too long on the tree, it bite a stone.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Sudanese refugees in Wedwell Camp in northern Bahar al-Ghazal state say the World Food Programme's cut in food rations harms children who are struggling with malnutrition. For VOA News, Juliana Shapai has more from Juba.
World Food Programme officials in northern Bahar al-Ghazal state say the Wedwell refugees resettlement camp receive at least 20 to 30 new families in a day whose children are acutely malnourished because of the long journey from Sudan. The WFP says it's working with the non-profit Alight to provide nutrition and child-friendly space in Wedwell. Mohammed Mahmoud Ahmed is a camp leader in Wedwell. He says since last May, many children have become malnourished.
WFP used to give us a ratio of 70%, and now they have reduced it to 50%. And this ratio is not enough for children and not enough for complete nutrition. We have suffered since the reduction, and many things happened to pregnant women. We have a woman who was expecting and went to Awil town to give birth. She died because of not having enough. We call upon all organizations to support the refugees with nutrition.
Jerry Ogak is the program policy officer for nutrition at the World Food Program in northern Bahar al-Ghazal state. Ogak says the WFP offers nutritional services to children under the age of 6 and their mothers. He says WFP is looking for funds to handle for tackling malnutrition at the refugee camp.
The challenges here in Wedwell is basically these children. And they do come when they are malnourished because of the distances, the movement, and then also the lack of food when they were coming from Sudan, crossing into South Sudan. So most of them come when they are malnourished. And yes, we do provide nutrition services to them here. We provide treatment for children who are moderately acute, who are presenting moderate acute malnutrition.
Ogak added that the WFP provides high-energy biscuits to children and blanket supplementary feeding as families move from the reception center to the Wedwell resettlement camp. Fatima Abdallah is a mother of one who has been in the camp since last September. She made the journey from Sudan with her infant son.
My son was very sick, but since I brought him here at the Alight Nutrition Center, he's doing better now, not like before. I would like them to increase the ration of what they give us so that our children can heal completely. I feed him the energy biscuit only, one per day, and they give me for 14 days. My son is 1 year and 3 months now.
Paul Aliu is a nutrition officer at the non-profit Alight. He says the friendly space for children at the camp is not enough for the children who come every day.
The challenges we face, you know, the toys look nice and most of the children, they would love to collect them and go back home with them. So this is a very big challenge we are facing, but at least we usually have someone who is there to make sure he or she guides them on some other things they could do and also make sure they are not collecting the toys. Another option we also put is We advise the caregivers to also be doing local toys at home.
He added that those coming from conflict zones are usually traumatized and need a good environment. Aid agencies operating in South Sudan say most of the Sudanese refugees in Wedwill are suffering from various illness. UNICEF, UNHCR and WFP are providing support but faces funding shortages. For VOA News, I'm Juliana Shapai in Juba.
From Juba, we come back to the United States, where Super Tuesday, the night that has been known to make or break candidates in the past, is over. More convention delegates are awarded on Super Tuesday than any other night of the campaign year. 15 states and the U.S. territory conducted primaries and caucuses for the Democratic and Republican presidential candidates. VOA's senior Washington correspondent Caroline Presutti brings us the highlights and tells us what is next.
It is the biggest night yet in the presidential campaign, and former President Donald Trump comes out the victor on the Republican side.
We're going to make America great again, greater than ever before. Thank you very much. It's been a big night.
The former president won all but one of the states on Tuesday and leads rival Nikki Haley by hundreds of delegates. The former U.N. ambassador won Vermont on Tuesday and Washington, D.C. over the weekend.
The reason I'm doing this is for my kids and your kids and your grandkids.
On the Democratic side, President Joe Biden was by far the winner on Super Tuesday, except for losing American Samoa. The president released a statement asking Americans, are we going to keep moving forward or will we allow Donald Trump to drag us backwards? Haley had hoped more voters, even Democrats, would choose her as an anti-Trump vote, but it proved difficult to get enough primary voters to adopt the strategy. Virginia voter Shea Segal considered it, but voted for Biden.
My primary concern this election is the preservation of America as I know it, which means leadership that is not Donald Trump. So whether that is supporting President Joe Biden or whether that is, you know, casting a vote for a more moderate Republican, either achieves that goal.
Reg Mitchell disagrees.
Donald Trump, four more years if we can do it. The first four went well as far as I was concerned.
Younger voters are turned off by the advanced ages of the former and current presidents. First-time voter Donna Mendez chose Democrat Marianne Williamson.
I feel like Biden's getting too old to, I guess, run a country for another 4 years. And it would be nice to have, like, diversity in the office, especially first woman president.
They call it Super Tuesday for a reason. This is a big one.
With tonight's wins, former President Donald Trump could get enough delegates to lock in the Republican nomination as early as next Tuesday, when four more states vote. Carolyn Presutti, VOA News, Arlington, Virginia.
Another commercial ship was hit by a Houthi missile in the Gulf of Aden on Monday, causing damage as Iranian-backed Houthi militants in Yemen continue attacks on international shipping lanes in the Gulf of Aden and the Red Sea. A coalition of about two dozen countries, including the United States and the United Kingdom, has been working to secure the waters. But noticeably absent from the coalition is China, even though about 40% of the trade between Europe and Asia goes through the area. VOA's Carla Babs has more from the Pentagon.
This is the MV Ruby Mar on her way to the bottom of the Red Sea, slowly sinking since a Houthi missile struck the ship last month. The Ruby Mar is the Houthis' first sunken ship, but they've damaged more than a dozen others and even boarded one ship since mid-November. Republican Senator Todd Young of Indiana.
Here we are. In the midst of a real security crisis, which is for so many an economic and diplomatic crisis in the region, and China's nowhere to be found.
The U.S. and U.K. militaries have launched multiple strikes against Houthi targets in Yemen to destroy weapons and radars used to hit commercial ships, a problem that prompted a Senate hearing last week. Republican Senator Mitt Romney of Utah spoke at the hearing.
We're out there, you know, with our flag flying and our men and women in harm's way. China is the nation that I would presume is most impacted by closing off trade to the Red Sea, and yet they're sitting on the sidelines pretending like they're everybody's friend.
Senators heard from U.S. Special Envoy for Yemen, Tim Lenderking.
We do see a certain degree of freeloading that is absolutely unacceptable. When we talk about an international problem that needs an international solution, we need the Chinese much more aggressively engaged.
A spokesperson for China's embassy in Washington recently told VOA that, on the whole, China stands ready to work with all parties to safeguard the safety of international shipping lanes. China reportedly deployed its 46th fleet to the Gulf on February 21st, but VOA and others have not been able to confirm the fleet's arrival in the Red Sea region. Pentagon Press Secretary Major General Pat Ryder.
We would welcome a productive role for China to play, but to my knowledge, at this stage, they have not offered, nor are they conducting any type of operations to help safeguard mariners or international shipping.
Analysts warn that while the Chinese have tried to help with international problems in a few instances over the past decade, their involvement has not always been for altruistic reasons. Michael O'Hanlon is a senior foreign policy fellow at the Brookings Institution.
There's also the plausible explanation they could be sending ships just to gather intelligence on the performance of our missile and drone intercept technology. My expectation is China will try to help a little in the general cause, but yes, we'll be more focused on its own ships, and will be more focused on learning what the U.S. is up to.
Beijing has some leverage in the region as the largest buyer of Iran's crude oil, but to date has not shown enough leverage over Iran to stop missile attacks from the Iran-backed Houthis. The militants say that ships from China and Russia can safely pass through the Red Sea, but a tanker carrying Russian oil was hit by a Houthi missile earlier this year. Carla Babb, VOA News, the Pentagon.
And that's all we prepared for this Wednesday, March 6, 2024, when I'll leave you with the Freedom Boys and the song Mama Sara.
Beat your brothers, Naski and Freedom Boys. Nam, Nina, WJ, Timogan. Let them know.
We've been listening to the Freedom Boys and the song Mama Sara. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Bill Bass, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Petit sur nous, soit, ou mon père, gagne, ma nous, soit, t'as nassi, ou mon ma, ou mon calor, ou jalide, ou mon da,
chalao, no subo a tomar cuesco.